Are there any agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence? Remark required? Okay, it's time for public comment, and you're welcome to come up and speak. We will listen carefully, but we cannot respond.
Just keep talking.
Okay, so Casey Carlson, I'm here tonight as the union rep at Soquel High School. And there are other Soquel High School teachers here. Erin Osamoto, Isabel Pandel for English. Justin Sweat, math teacher. And his wife, Marissa Sweat Parashon, who's a social studies teacher. So we're here tonight to talk about technology and how this came up as an issue that we decided to bring to the board's attention. Is at the beginning of this year, I had a student who has medically diagnosed autism, and one of his classes wasn't working out. We had to rearrange his schedule, and I moved him to a new Spanish class that had 36 students as opposed to the first one that had 38, so I thought, this is good. And then the teacher said to me, oh, this isn't going to work because we have 35 Chromebooks, and we use the Chromebooks all the time, and now we have student 36. So I emailed curriculum, and they told me, sorry, there just aren't any more Chromebooks. Now, eventually, Stacy O'Farrell got a Chromebook for the student because he's in special ed. But I wondered if other people have this issue, and I asked the teachers, and it turns out that this is an ongoing issue, that we do have classes over 35, and then that this brought up all these different technology concerns, and the teachers are shy a lot of times about presenting issues of concerns, so they came tonight to tell you what some of their concerns are about technology.
Hi, I'm going to start, so I was just going to talk a little bit more about the Chromebooks. I have a class of 38, two of 36, and then two that can use the Chrome cards. In the beginning of the year, what I did as a solution was I would let a kid use my desktop computer, let a kid use my district distributed laptop, borrow a computer from a teacher next door to make it work. Last year, what I would do was keep my fingers crossed that somebody would be absent, which isn't really what I want to be doing. So ideally, the cards have space for 36 computers, and most classes cap out at 36. So even if we had one more Chromebook per cart, that would help. Our other idea is that we could have a small cart with about, I don't know, 5 to 10 Chromebooks. The teachers who had classes over 36 could check out as long as it's clear that their roster has more kids, so that then we have equitable distribution and we can use the technology in our classes. That's my basic idea. It's just really limiting, and I think that we find solutions. We figure it out, like I said, we borrow, we use other things, but it would be great if we had the technology at our disposal.
Maybe one of the issues that has come up in my classroom is the availability of the internet. Most of the time it works, but we're looking at maybe 90% of the time I can rely on it, and that's really hinders my ability to maybe plan reliably for lessons in the future. If I've got a half-hour activity or longer set aside for to be done on the Chromebooks, it's really hard when suddenly the internet is no longer working for 10 or 15 minutes and we're all sitting there trying to figure out what to do. So I'd like us to think of internet as a utility, like water or electricity. Like it needs to be at about a 99% uptime. It needs to be up, available for us to use all the time, not just sporadically throughout the day or for an hour it's down. And I think that's one of my favorite answers.
Hello. So I'm going to address actually in some ways like a slightly lower tech issue, but it's something that I think we've all heard comment about, which is printers. There aren't any, or I guess some, there's like sort of random distribution of printers at my school. Like I know that I've bought my own printer, I bought my own printer ink, and that's mostly the norm. Some people have had printers donated. Printer ink is one of the asks that we do back to school night, is really like the, we would love Amazon cards, so we can buy printer inks. And to me, that's sort of like pretty baseline like piece of technology that I think is reasonable to my workplace to provide when one of the things I need to do to be able to do my substitute things like things off so I can run off photocopies and provide them to my students to be able to do their work. This year we tried to address this by seeing if we could have a network printer. And we do have one copier at the school that can be networked, but it would mean that anytime anybody uses it, whoever's using the copier or the copier would get interrupted to have somebody's print job to print out. And if, for those of you who've been in the classroom, and that's really threatening. Like if I'm like running off 100 photocopies, I don't want somebody's random print to come to sort of show up and interrupt me. So the teachers decided that was not acceptable. We even have a donated printer laying around that could be used. We asked if it could be networked, and the answer was, well, nobody can pay for the toner. And so that kind of thing is like, I feel like we're looking really futuristically in some areas of tech, which is awesome. But I don't want to forget with some like pretty like kind of old things that have not been resolved. And printers are really, really one of them. Every communication I made with the district as a tech coach, because I'm one of the tech coaches, about trying to network that printer was, we're trying to go paperless. And that was a kind of really disappointing response because I said, well, I would love to go paperless the day that you can give me a one-to-one device ratio with my students, the day that, you can issue every kid an iPad or a Chromebook that's supported, then I will go paperless. I will gladly put everything into the classroom and the kids will hand everything in online. But I can't say to my kids, like, I'm going paperless if they don't have computers themselves. It's not realistic. And I can't go paperless.
All right, I want to talk about some positives of technology. I had the pleasure of going to the Mid-America Conference over the summer. I spent a week there. I've already applied to go to the two-week program, and hopefully I will be able to go. I made some huge strides in my own curriculum. I developed my own website with another teacher. I have added my own videos for chapters. I've added so much stuff so that no student in my class could say that they don't know what's going on or how to grab access to any of the handouts that I have in class. It's been huge. But I also developed a lot of different quizzes that are online through Kahoot. And I was not able to give out any of these quizzes at this point so far in the year, because I'm not allowed to access the Chrome card except for one period each week, because we have four English teachers and one social studies teacher in my hallway, and so it limited us so that we had to equitably divide up the Chrome cards so that we can only use it. So if I have my A2 class, I can only check it out for one A2 class a week, and that's really limiting the amount of time that I can use with the Chrome cards. If it would be 15 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour that I could use them twice a week, I could do a whole lot more with the technology that I've developed, already put out into the world, but then haven't been able to use because of it. So my hope is that we can keep sending, the Mid-America program was amazing, we can keep sending our teachers there. I think it was a huge learning curve for me. And then we can help in keeping that technology in the classroom, especially because we're being evaluated on that technology. And if we can't have access to it, I can't prove to my superiors that I'm using it on a daily basis.
Okay. We're going to finish up here. We have one letter, email that you want to give out to the board. Robin Miranda wasn't able to be here tonight, so she wrote you guys an email. And I just want to say, if you guys want to check out Erin and Sheila Johnson Westy, here their curriculum, they're teaching the same thing, and there's a shared website at
Healy,
right?
Yeah,
it's amazing, and it's so good for our students. Everything's on there, the agenda, the resources. It's great. So I just want to close by saying thank you for listening to our impromptu presentation. And as the teachers' union rep, I feel very conscious about the fact that they're being evaluated incorporating technology into their classroom, and at the same time increasing student engagement. And if they're trying to incorporate technology but it's not working or they don't have enough, then it's pretty hard to really keep everybody engaged. So that's an ongoing goal for the district, and that really needs to be kept in mind. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak tonight?
I'm Jim Wallerstedt. I'm a big sponsor and a big participant in the Santa Cruz City Schools. I would like to express my sincere appreciation over the financial settlement that we had with the teachers. I was thrilled with Mises and read the story in the Sentinel four times on Sunday. I have worked with Don Maxwell, I've worked with George Martinez, and I've worked with Barry Kirshen. I think this is a turning point for this particular school district. I go back to the time of Roy Nelson, when Roy Nelson was the superintendent here. And I know that this is a wonderful thing. I think it's, I'm sure that the greater Santa Cruz Federation were extremely cooperative and helpful, and I think it was a win-win kind of settlement. I congratulate all of you on having the foresight and the intelligence and the knowledge to make such a great decision. And I especially commend the administration and the board, as well as the teachers. This is one, it couldn't happen at a better time with the parcel tax coming up. So thank you very much. You really made my day on Sunday.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? The next item is superintendent's report.
I know that the board can't address public comment, but I do just want to stop and thank the teachers who came tonight to share what's working, what's not working. Didn't realize that the printer problem was what it was. And that is a basic tool issue. Part of what's hard and difficult is there are so many needs still, even though, and I part of my talk to, or my superintendent's report tonight is my conversation with Mark Stone this last week, Assemblyman Mark Stone, and talking about the perception in California is that public schools got all this money. And the reality is we still are very, very far from where we were in 2007, and it's a long time before we'll get to even where that was. So there's just so many needs and so many demands on those resources, but it's really good for us to hear it. And we are going to go through a budget process again where we're going to be asking teachers and the greater community about what your priorities are. And that should go out in an email survey again in November. Please make sure that's in there. But even before that, I think we need to have a conversation about how we meet the immediate needs so that you can do your job. So just wanted to follow up on that. And thank you for, you know, working to integrate technology into your instruction. There's all kinds of pedagogical shifts going on with the Common Core, and that's a really important one. And you can't be held accountable for integrating technology when you don't have it available. And we are excited that we have more technology available than we've had in a long time. If you look at our student-to-device ratio, if we count the outdated computers, it's 3-1. If we don't count the outdated computers, it's 5-1. But it's inequitable across the district. There are some schools that were able through federal grants or other things to bring in more technology than others, and so there's some schools that are struggling more than others to have those resources. This last week, we had our second community meeting, our board's community meeting. We didn't have anybody to attend, but Jeremy and Claudia and I had a great walk around the Soquel High campus. We got some exercise, had some opportunity to check in, and we were able to meet with the Soquel Fund when they had their meeting, and they let us meet with them at the very beginning and talk to them just a little bit. But it was just kind of a nice evening to have some time to check in. And our next community meeting is scheduled for this Thursday. It's been the first two, it's always great to hear from parents and to hear what they're thinking about and what their needs are and what's important to them, and we'll get an opportunity to do so at Westlake tomorrow at 6:30. As I mentioned before, I was able to meet with Assemblyman Mark Stone last Monday. We talked a little bit about local control funding formula, and on the dice, you'll see the packet I provided for him that illustrated some of what I consider to be the problems of the local control funding formula. And the first page that you'll see is comes out of the Fresno and Clovis school districts, and it's a comparison of two students that live across the street from each other but attend in the different school districts because that's the boundary line, and what resources are available to English learners in that school district. And it's very different from one district to the next, even though the schools that they represent are very much the same. If you look at the second page, it looks at a tale of two students in Santa Cruz County, and it compares a student at Galt Elementary School and at Del Mar Elementary School, and the difference that will be funded per pupil at full funding in 2021. It's really significant, even though Galt Elementary School actually has a higher free and reduced lunch percentage and a higher English learner percentage than the Live Oak Elementary School. You'll go on to that next page, and it looks at the breakdown of how all of the large districts in the county, or the larger districts, not the small, the one school districts, but how all the other districts in the county will be funded at full funding in the comparison to us. I also shared with him on the next thing the STRS and PRS implications for the years, the coming years out, and how that's going to impact our budget. And the article from Public Policy. Institute of California on why that asks, will high needs students benefit from the local control funding formula? We had a good conversation. It was brief, but I wanted him to hear how it was impacting students in Santa Cruz. And I wanted you to see the packet I provided him. This week and next week, we're having volunteer lunch and after-school meetings at all the school sites. Barry and a member of cabinet's going out. We're talking about the November endeavor that we have with Measures O&P. We're talking about the certificated retirement incentive that was built into the settlement from this last spring. And we're also discussing a new social media AR that's designed to just give some guidelines to help protect teachers in the new digital age. So we're just reviewing some recommendations from that. Yesterday, I was our skill leaders, our secondary skill leaders, were able to participate for a full day of professional learning with Paul Bloomberg, who is working with them on effective professional learning communities and using assessment to inform practice. Was able to sit in at the very beginning a little bit, and then a little later in the morning, and hear some really good conversations between teachers about what's working, what they see as next steps, and it was time for them to do some planning about their work together this year. This last Saturday, I attended the San Jose State University's administrative, they do full day days of class three or four times a year. They asked me to come sit on a panel of superintendents. I had the opportunity to talk with Steve Copold a little bit, who's one of the students in that program, as well as several other administrative candidates. Saturday evening, I attended the Taste of the Warriors. I believe that our income from that night is about $10,000. And it was the first time that they used this annual season ticket holders event as a fundraiser for us, and I talked to Jim Wireman at the end of the night, and he really feels like this is something that could earn more money than that for the school district and is looking forward to continuing to work with us on that. Next Monday night, just a reminder, is the AVID fundraiser that's hosted by the Santa Cruz Education Foundation at Oswald's. It's going to be from 5 to 7, and it's not too late to get tickets through Bound Paper Tickets if you're interested in attending. Thank you very much.
Can we report next?
Hi. So, actually, fairly relevant, I don't realize it, but one of the noticeable events at Santa Cruz High is that our library printer has been out of ink for a while. It hasn't now, so we're good. But there was a lot of chaos when half the students couldn't print out their last minute essays at the last minute. So that was a big impact, but we're good now. We had a back to school day last Thursday, which had a really good turnout, and we have breakfast in the quad for the students that do bike, skateboard, or scooter, or walk to school. Monday saw an unannounced fire drill, and I'm told we performed really well, having everyone out in the school over 1,000 in under 6 minutes, so that was really cool to see. We had homecoming court nominations this week at Santa Cruz High, and it was announced that all grades will participate in a parade with themed clothes, so that should be interesting, especially because the grades themselves are picking the themes. RASB is also planning a haunted house themed as Alice in Wonderland, and that's going to be on the Friday the 30th, so I would encourage you to attend. Our club, such as the Ghost Hunter Alliance, have formed since the beginning of school, and I've heard rumors of a philosophy club, and they're starting to hold their first meetings now. I'm told the mock trial tryouts had a huge turnout, and it was very competitive. Our Global Student Embassy is recruiting volunteers for a garden work day this Saturday from 10 to 1 at the Santa Cruz High Garden, which is on Royal Street. And I got to attend a student senate meeting today, and there was a lot of discussion about the security gates and how they could be less of a hindrance to students, especially between classes. And the idea of a student-run mural project was met with a lot of enthusiasm, so I'll let you know how that pans out. I also spent the last 2 weekends at Open Studios, first working for the North County Open Studios and then visiting the South County Open Studios. And it was really cool to see how many students there were that was really excited to get a chance to connect with the community's artists and be inspired, and I'm sure they did some inspiring themselves. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Deb?
Well, I just want to announce one thing, and maybe Casey can let the folks at SoCal High know. Tomorrow night, the Technology Task Force is meeting at at the Brent Sifforti Innovation Center. And I really encourage staff to come. It's an opportunity for teachers and staff and parents to talk about issues across the district and plan. And one of the things we talk about a lot is the inequity of schools who can fundraise to buy certain things, like Chrome carts that are $11,000 a piece. And also how technology is not just instructional, but it touches everything everybody does at some point in their workday or in their learning day. So tomorrow night, 6 to 7:30 at the Brent Sifforti Innovation Center. And that's it.
Thank you. Dee Dee?
I have no reports.
I'd like to welcome my friends from Sister Cities. Peggy, if you could stand up for a second. And then, of course, there's Gail, if you could stand up. And then there's Mr. Brennan, and Brennan, and Lilith Olson, a teacher at SoCal High School, art teacher, I believe, has gotten involved. And so I'm really thrilled that they're here. And I'd love to see this become an annual report, because so much of what the good people at Sister Cities does, and Mr. Brennan has been doing it for, what, 3 decades, and I don't know. I think could really dovetail into what we do. So I'm very excited to hear you guys, and I thank you so much for being here. Thanks.
I had the opportunity yesterday to step into the professional learning communities and observe our skill leaders working with Paul Bloomberg, and it was great to see the collaboration and what goes into what it takes to really craft your task for the teachers and those involved with the students and who directly work with them. I also had the opportunity, and this was just a little bit more on the outskirts, to attend the Santa Cruz Arts Commission Artist of the Year, which celebrated Jeff Dunn as the 2015 Artist of the Year. It was a wonderful event held at the mall. It was the first time that I got to meet or learn of and actually see in action Nina, Simon. So it's wonderful. I'm really happy to see the way the mall's coming along, the way the arts are reaching out, and how the community supports it. It's a very special place, Santa Cruz, and I think it helps to reflect in our schools. So Mr. Dunn was lively as usual, and he is one of Santa Cruz City School's own, quite the historian, so his stories are always pretty fun. Thanks.
On October 3rd, I attended BAMEC with 10 Santa Cruz City Schools LGBT youth activists that came from Santa Cruz High, Harbor High, and Delta. I want to thank Senator Bill Monning and Assemblyman Mark Stone, who hosts two tables and invites students to come, and John Laird, who spoke to the students about their activism. It was a great evening. I attended a fabulous fundraiser for Monarch Community School. I saw Helene there, and we danced to Slugs and Roses, and Monarch got to make lots of money and make a lot of people happy to dance on a Friday. And then yesterday I was given a tour of the Harbor High Library by librarian Shannon Green. I got to see a lot about I asked her to just kind of give me a sense of what her work is like. So she gave me a tour, and she sort of walked me through a typical day. I'd like to do the same thing. I'm hoping to do the same thing at the other two high schools. And I'm really interested in, I was responding to librarian concerns about textbook processing. So I think it's really something to think about in terms of having fully credentialed librarians and making sure that we are using them to serve students and not textbook shelving. And then last night I was at De La Viega's parent meeting. There were about 35 parents at the parent meeting. It was wonderful. And they spoke about a event where they have people donate used Halloween costumes so that when kids come to school on Halloween day, if they don't have a Halloween costume, there's a little area where they can go so that everybody can wear a costume. So if anybody's got a used Halloween costume that would fit a kindergarten or TK through fifth grader, they accept them at the front office. I thought that was a very sweet part of their community.
So first, Ella, I would like you to encourage the people who were talking about the gates to see if they can get some of that information back towards us in an email or any form that is easy for them. Not only did my daughter go there, but a whole bunch of people in my family went there, and I'm very interested in the gate issue. I think it's got lots of sides to it, a lot of things to figure out. But I'm excited to hear that the students are giving their opinions, and I would love to be able to hear some of that. So I'm really thankful that you brought it up here, but if they want to pass on specifics, I would like to hear them. Thanks for doing that. And this actually was my actual thought before Casey brought all the teachers today, but I was thinking this last week about, because I worked in the schools until just a few years ago now, getting to be three, and how one of the quality of life issues that was the most difficult was the small things, the not being able to have enough. That example of teachers who have one short of a computer and then you're using, I've seen that happen in your classroom, Casey. Then they're using their computer and then they have somebody sitting with a borrowed computer. But also with paper, with supplies, all of those things, that it's the small things, and how easy it is when we're trying to manage large budget issues to have that slip. And so what I was thinking is that I was really going to try to keep some kind of a book in which when I heard these examples, I was going to write them down. Because when I'm in the middle of budget things, all of a sudden, once again, you forget about, a whole bunch of teachers have one too few Chromebooks, or, the teacher has to be spending all their own money on supplies. So I was, on two levels, I was really appreciative. One, because they came here, and I'm hoping that they can actually put those things in writing and send them to us too, because it's much easier to keep it in your mind when we have budget situations. And I was really happy to hear Chris say, we're going to try to deal with that, because if we knew that and we could earmark, some kind of fund that we could say this is going to help us with whatever is the issue that's coming up this year, it would really be helpful. But I'm also so happy you brought teachers here to do it. And so, yay! Good. I mean, I'm just really happy you did that, rather than just say, well, I'll go tell them, get them here. So I was really appreciative. And I like the little catch 22 of we're going to get graded on this, but we don't have it. And like Chris said, I don't think anybody's going to do that. So, but I really was very appreciative of it. And I think I am going to make that my commitment for this year to try to keep a better idea of the small things that are the quality of life things, and see if we can, watch for those. Chris, I'm so impressed by what you did with Mark Stone. One of the things that's really frustrating to me is we have this unequal situation. We can't even get together with the other people that have it because we can't quite figure out who they are. And clearly the people, our government officials, are the ones that can try to make some movement on this. And Mark is the perfect person. But I'm really impressed by how much work went into this and how you made it visual so that people could get it. I'm very, very appreciative of that. And I'm hoping it'll work. And finally, and all I've done this week is call ONP and nothing else of interest to any of you. So I have nothing to report from my point of view, but I also welcome the Sister Cities people here. And thanks for coming.
Yeah, I was inspired by the student stories at this year's Food What Dinner, mm-hmm. and pleased to say that they raised their $80,000 goal this year. Schools Plus funds teacher-directed projects throughout the county, and a number of our teachers have received grants from this. I went to a meeting, and I'm going to join their board, and I have flyers or pamphlets. And I enjoyed visiting Soquel High School yesterday and visiting some of the math classrooms. And that ends my report. Our next item is the approval of the minutes. And it's the minutes of the regular meeting on September 30th. Do we have a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jeremy moves. Is there a second?
A second.
And Deb seconds. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Student recommendation?
Aye.
Okay. The next item is the consent agenda. Are there any items that the board members would like pulled for discussion?
I was looking for the one about the budget. Is that in the consent agenda? The budget developmental calendar?
No.
Yes. Okay. No, so nothing from the board?
A comment on one item.
Okay. Go ahead.
On 8.1.7.1.1, it appears to be security patrol monitoring of four of the sites for some period of time. And I just wanted to comment that it's been a long time since we've had monitoring of alarms, but we are still having break-ins. And we do have a lot of technology, some of it new, stored in classrooms, lab facilities, and whatnot. And it's a huge setback when a classroom or a lab facility is broken into and equipment is stolen, supplies are tampered with. Sometimes there's vandalism. And as we are able to add, I'd like for the board to consider restoring the electronic alarm monitoring that we used to have. And it's been probably 10 years, and I'm guessing how long it's been since we ended that contract with the same company, this first alarm.
Any other comments? Any questions or comments from the board? Do we have a motion?
Move to approve.
Okay, Allison moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
And Sheila seconds. Student recommendation?
Aye.
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 Patty?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye, but your item is on.
Oh, it is on
oh,
there?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh.
It is.
I was thinking you thought it was part of the, I just meant it wasn't part of the contract. My
blame
my mistake,
her.
So please do
I just had a question.
Okay, I think we can ask the question now.
Yes, or if you would like to pull it right now for a separate vote and discussion, please.
No, it's not a separate
totally
vote and discussion. It was just a question
okay.
of Jim. Hi, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know on the budget calendar, does the PTOC mm-hmm. committee automatically get pulled into the budget meetings? Are they invited? Are they automatically invited to come?
I'm not aware of.
Everybody's invited.
But everybody's invited.
Public
meeting.
Mm-hmm. But they have a input into the budget, and I'm wondering how that input comes in. Because they were asking that question in the spring.
Actually, in the bylaws, they don't have input into the budget. Mm-hmm. Through their role as a PTOC member, they have input into the budget in their role as a community member, like everybody else.
But their role as a committee, they have input in
no,
whether we're
no.
using the parcel tax money
oversight.
Correctly.
It's oversight.
It's yeah. They say, does this expenditure meet the expectations laid out in the ballot language? Yes or no.
Uh huh.
That's what their role is.
So you're saying they don't need to be at the budget meetings in order to be able to do that.
No.
Okay.
That they do it through PTOC and they make a report annually to the board.
And they're welcome to come to the open meeting if they want to, but they don't need it in order to know how the budget is playing out. Okay. Because
right.
they asked that question in the spring and I wanted to make sure I had an answer for it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Items, a report of actions taken in closed session?
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Superintendent Chris Monroe with direction regarding SCCCCE negotiations for 2014-15 and 2015-16. The Board of Trustees heard an update on employee discipline, dismissal, release, and complaint. The Board of Trustees conferred with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation.
Thank you. Okay, item 8.3.1 is resolution 1915-16, Youth Violence Prevention Task Force.
Thank you. Tonight we're welcoming Eileen Brown, who will be sharing with us both a little bit of background about this resolution and inviting a representative from the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force to share more about the work they do.
Thanks. So the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force came together as a response to an increase in youth violence. And as you know, that directly impacted three of our students who lost their lives over the past several years. There, Sarah Emmerich is the coordinator of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force, who works for United Way. I'm sorry. Thanks. Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry. I almost forget my voice again. Yeah. Sounds so loud. So, again, the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force came together in response to an increase in youth violence in the Santa Cruz County. This directly impacted several of our students, and we have been involved every step of the way in the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force. Tonight, we're asking for your approval of a resolution supporting the work of this task force and the strategic plan. We're going to be participating in the strategic plan on work groups, one of which directly is related to schools. And as you hear tonight, as Sarah presents, the goals of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force mirror almost exactly our district goals in supporting the students who are college and career ready and have meaningful participation in school, and are supported by safe schools and caring adults. Almost exactly what we've been working on in our district in the last few years also. So Sarah Emmerich is the coordinator of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force. which is a grant of United Way and the Criminal Justice Council, and she'll take you through the strategic planning process and what the strategic plan now looks like.
I've got it here as well.
Do we have a clicker? Or what?
Yes.
Good evening, board members. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Eileen, for the introduction.
Thank you.
So, as Eileen mentioned, my name is Sarah Emmert. I am the coordinator for the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force. I work with United Way. Just a little bit about myself. Born and raised in Santa Cruz County, grew up mostly in South County, but I did attend Soquel High, which I believe is in your district. So, 3 years ago, the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force was convened. Santa Cruz County, unfortunately, given our population, has actually fairly high rates of youth violence. Yes, those numbers have been going down, which is great. And historically, there's been a lot of efforts to address youth violence in our community. So different collaborative efforts, such as BASTA, community-based organizations, efforts in the schools and in the families. And that being said, never before has there been a coordinated, collaborative effort that strategically looks at the issue countywide. So 3 years ago, Chief of Probation, who was then Assistant Chief, Fernando Giraldo, was tasked with addressing the issue. He formed the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force. He knew that he wanted something that came from the community, so he reached out to Megan Joseph, who's the Director of Community Organizing with United Way. He also knew he wanted it to be data-driven. So he also reached out to Applied Survey Research to bring in the data component. What I'd like to cover today is just an overview of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force, our strategic planning process. We'll go into what's in the actual strategic plan. I'll highlight what's happening in regards to action, because we're full-blown in implementation and action with this initiative. And then I'll open it up for Q&A and talk about the adoption of the plan. First of all, can I get a show of hands for who has heard of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force? Great. Who has been involved in the effort in any way, shape, or form? Eileen, contributed?
Thank you. Okay, excellent.
Great. Cut off a little bit. So even though it is framed as a youth violence prevention strategic plan, I do want you to know that it's really strength-based. The plan is focused on promoting well-being for all youth and families in our all youth and families in our community. The mission of the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force is to create an equitable, united, and safe county where all youth are engaged in family, school, and community, have a sense of safety and well-being, feel they have a voice and are empowered to use it, and are able to access opportunities for successful transition into adulthood. We are a task force of the Countywide Criminal Justice Council. The design team or the process team is Probation, United Way, Applied Survey Research, and Jorge Zamora on Watsonville PD, who is the chair of our countywide steering committee. During the strategic planning process, the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force is really open to anyone who felt they had a role to play in addressing the issues. There's three focus areas: promoting positive child and youth development, which includes schools, ensuring supported and functioning families, and foster safe and vibrant neighborhoods. We wanted to take a public health approach with this. This isn't just a law enforcement issue. And we also know we come in just to look at issues impacting youth. We need to look at what's going on in the schools, what's going on within the families, as well as the neighborhoods. As I mentioned earlier, we knew we wanted it to be data-driven. Stories and anecdotal evidence is important, and we wanted to know what's really going on out there. So we did a community assessment. Applied Survey Research helped us look at over 60 indicators or data points of what are the risk and protective factors, what's going on in our community, what's going on with gang activity or youth engaging in positive activities in their community, youth employment, families feeling like they're supported, all kinds, I mean, over 60 indicators. And so we published the first Status on Youth Violence data report for Santa Cruz County. Lots of good information in there. We used that to really frame our strategic planning process. We did a year and a half of strategic planning, and starting in April, we embarked with implementation. We knew that if we wanted to have success with this initiative, we had to focus on a specific age age range. According to the Center for Disease Control, between the ages of 10 and 24, homicide is, I believe, the second leading cause of death. And there's a lot of risk factors in this age range. We also realize that pre-10 is a really important age range as well, especially for prevention. But the Criminal Justice Council chose this age group to look at. So it's youth ages 10 to 17 and young adults ages 18 to 24. And we included the 18 to 24 because even though they're adults, we realize the brain doesn't stop developing until about age 24 or 25. We were committed to having a plan that came from the community. We engaged over 300 community members through community input sessions, summits, community events, work group meetings. We conducted monthly work group meetings with representatives from diverse sectors, community, education, health, justice, and government. I want to acknowledge Eileen Brown. She sat on panels during this effort. She participated in key informant interviews, and then she attended a lot of our community events. And even though our monthly work group meetings, we made sure they were after school hours and they were mid-county so that both those in North and South County would be easier to attend, we realized that not everybody could come to our meetings. And we really wanted to hear from voices that aren't typically heard in processes like this. So we went to them. We did family and youth focus groups in English and in Spanish. We heard from families, migrant ed families, families whose students are struggling in school or in the justice system. We went to juvenile hall, heard from the youth there. We really wanted to gain perspective on what are opportunities in the community, what's working, because we know things are working and we want to leverage that, and where are there gaps and barriers. We did a focus group at Santa Cruz Hall, which was Santa Cruz High, which was really informative. We did online educational surveys, so Joanne Allen with the COE helped us do a countywide educational survey with leaders in the schools about what's working in regards to best practices and where are their gaps that they would like to see implemented in the schools. We talked to business leaders, community-based organizations, education, justice, government, as well as those really doing direct services and in the trenches, including teachers. We did ride-alongs with Santa Cruz PD and Watsonville PD. So we have those three focus areas. We have youth, family, and neighborhoods. The Promoting Positive Child and Youth Development has four results or goal areas. Number one, youth are life, college, and career ready. Number two, youth are valued and have meaningful participation in their community. Number three, youth are supported by caring adults. And number four, youth are safe and feel safe at school. And at this time, I'd actually like you to open up your executive summary. And if you open it up, just so you know, the first row are all of the youth strategies, and you'll see the four results there. And the middle row is the family strategies, and the bottom row are the strategies for the neighborhood focus area. And on these slides, the items in the parentheses are the data that, or the indicators that we're looking at to measure our results. So things like skipping school, suspensions and expulsions, youth employment, relationships with caring adults are just some of them. For the family focus area, ensuring supported and functioning families, we have families are connected, engaged, and valued. All families have social emotional well-being, and all families are equitably supported by the community. At this time, I want to point out that equity and addressing equity is a must if we want to look at youth violence. And so throughout the planning process, in the plan and in implementation, looking through the lens of equity, whether it's racial and ethnic disparities or equitable access to services or programs, are all strategies in the plan. And then the last focus area, foster safe and vibrant neighborhoods. Now this is an area that's traditionally, you would think, would have stuff related to youth violence. So the first result, the community is safe and thriving, looks at adult crime rate, young adult arrest rates, gang activity, and youth homicides. And the strategies are pretty what you would think about in regards to youth violence. The second result or goal area is something that's really innovative, and it's becoming a best practice throughout the nation in regards to looking at issues of youth violence. The community is culturally and racially aware and responsive. So that's looking at proportionality, for example, race and ethnicity of youth arrested and on probation is proportionate to the race of population in the county. School discipline would be up there as well, but as we were putting this plan together at that point in time, the school disciplinary data wasn't necessarily accurate, but we're confident moving forward as the school districts work on inputting the data that we'll have access to that data as well. Strategies. So where did we come up with our strategies? There's over 75 strategies in the strategic plan. I'm telling you it's comprehensive. We wanted to take a public health approach and look at prevention, intervention, and suppression. We wanted something that was data-driven based on need and best practices. We wanted to leverage what's working. It was really important for us not to reinvent the wheel. We wanted to integrate recommendations from those with lived experience, whether it's youth in the schools, whether it's teachers, or whether it's cops in the streets. And there's gaps between where we are now and where we want to be. So we identified best practices to fill in those gaps. Additionally, it was important for us to not only include programmatic recommendations, like specific interventions, tutoring supports, but also to look at systems and policies and capacity building as well. So, I went through all 130 pages of your LCAP. Big task. Right? That's a lot of work that went into that. I want to acknowledge that and the ambitions that the school district is taking to achieve those goals. Implementation of this countywide youth violence prevention strategic plan is a huge task as well. We have so many mutual goals as we move forward. And it makes sense that we work together. I passed out a packet that has, it's our master strategies alphabetized. And what I did was I highlighted all of the strategies that are either school-based or require a school partnership to maximize impact. And we're not saying that this is all on the schools, because it's not, but we have to work together to look at these issues. And almost 60% of the strategies in the plan are school-related, which just shows the power of the schools in regards to engaging families as well as having success with youth. So here are some of the mutual goals that I pulled out of the plan, and there was others, but the text was getting so small that I wanted to make sure you were still able to read it. So some of our mutual goals in your LCAP and in our strategic plan are student achievement and graduation rates, school attendance and truancy, services and programs on school campuses, which I heard directly from your Santa Cruz High students that I did the focus group with, after school programs, looking at school disciplinary policies, increased college and career readiness, family engagement and involvement, and looking at issues of equity and gaps in achievement. So this is it's a countywide effort, and we also know that Santa Cruz has specific needs and strengths than, for example, SLV or Watsonville. So this is our organizational chart moving forward. We have two jurisdictional initiatives. We have the Watsonville Mayor's Youth Violence Prevention Initiative,
and the Santa Cruz Live Oak Youth Violence Prevention Initiative, which includes Davenport. Each of those initiatives has three work groups underneath it, modeled off of the strategic planning process. So youth, families, and neighborhoods. Allison attended our first steering committee for the Santa Cruz Life Oak Initiative. Thank you very much. And I believe Chris and Eileen are going to be trying to come to the next one. And I invite all of you to participate, whether it's at the steering committee level or the work group level. We really need your participation and perspective in having success with this plan. If you would like to check out the 149-page document during your winter break, please go to our website at United Way. It can be downloaded there. So just so you know, the work groups are, obviously we can't implement all 89 strategies at once. We are realistic. We are ambitious, but not that ambitious. So each work group is going to be prioritizing 3 to 5 strategies each. The work groups are going to be developing work plans. So how do we, for example, create safe routes to school? And then tasked with moving these forward. So questions for clarity, your thoughts?
Okay, do we have any questions or comments?
I have a question about the pathway to college or vocational school beyond high school. There's some work being done in Monterey County around cradle to career initiatives called Bright Futures, and one of the indicators that they pointed to is that transition from high school to college, and their data suggests that most of the high school students have aspirations for college, but they're not taking the AUG courses, and they're not aware of the financial aid process to get into colleges that are affordable for their families. So I was looking through this packet, which is very comprehensive, and trying to find something like that in here. And I know in our schools we have AVID programs which support our students on the college pathway, but I'm just wondering if it's included in here is something that's really important for those students who maybe have the aspirations but don't really have the guideposts for getting to higher education.
Yeah, so I know one of the strategies is like personalized education paths, which would include, for example, going to college and how to get there. It's in the work groups that they're going to be developing and identifying where are those gaps. So students not knowing about financial aid, for example, is a gap. And what's going to be in those work plans is, okay, how do we address that? How do we make sure students and their parents know about financial aid to get to college, whether it's Cabrillo or whether it's university? So all of that work of how do we fill in those gaps, the strategies are kind of like a roadmap where the action plans are, okay, how step by step do we get there?
And I think that's going to be an important place for the Santa Cruz County College commitment to weave in with the Youth Violence Prevention Task Force, because that is one of the primary missions of S4C, and I'll be presenting on that later this evening.
Okay, Sheila?
Thank you for all this work, and it's a little, I was like, really, you're going to do all this? So I'm happy to hear you're working in small pieces at a time. I was just wondering, this isn't a criticism, but I just think I can't find it. I'm like, Dee Dee, I'm not sure where it is. Does the issue of equity with students who have disabilities, the rate of learning disabilities in our incarcerated youth is so high, and because they've been missed or because they have not been given the services they needed. And I didn't see that listed here, so I see the families being equitably supported, but it didn't kind of come in terms of the kids, and I just was wondering, because I want the entire community to be aware of it. Is it in here somewhere?
Yeah, so looking at specific populations, again, will occur in the work groups where they're going to look at what are specific populations in our county are not getting their needs met, and how do we make sure that they're equitably supported. So all of that work occurs in the work groups with population-specific strategies. And we need community members to bring that to the attention of the work groups so that they don't get forgotten. But no, that's a really important conversation.
So would a particular work group be dealing with that issue, or?
Yeah, so it's the youth work group really has the school strategies in there. And then things like, I believe it's the mental health issues are in the neighborhood work group. But it's really the schools that are in the youth work group.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Allison? I just want to commend the work that you guys have done on this. It's an incredible plan. The fact that it's strengths-based, that it assumes that youth that are well-supported, families and communities that are well-supported, that violence decreases. And then the other thing that I think is so exciting about this is that the work really starts now, that the amazing work you've done to create this, it's really about... it's about to begin, because implementation is what's going to make a difference in the lives of youth. So I just commend the work that people have dedicated to this.
Are there any comments or questions from the public?
I just didn't hear any mention of Cabrillo College at all, except what you had just said at the end. Is Cabrillo figured into this stuff anywhere?
We've invited them to the steering committees, and they haven't attended. So we would love it if there was some nudging from some community members to encourage their participation. So, yes.
It's an action item, and we need a motion.
So moved. So,
Deb moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Do you have other questions?
No, no. Our respect question was, what's the action item?
Allison, yes. Okay. Student?
Aye.
The resolution.
Thank you so much. We are having our big kickoff event for Santa Cruz and Live Oak tomorrow at Simpkins from 3 to 5:30. I very much encourage you to attend, or to let you know those in the community that you feel have a role to play in turning this plan into action.
When is the next steering committee? Meeting.
The next steering committee is, I don't remember, my apologies, November 18th. I believe it's here, and I don't remember the time. Allison may have it in her calendar.
I'll let all.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
It's a Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
November 18th.
November 18th.
3 to 5.
3 to 5.
Hey.
Jeff, will stay here all night.
Our next item is 8.3.2, and Jeremy introduced our sister cities folks. But
I just want to again welcome you this evening. Thank you for being here tonight to share with us about the sister cities program that began in 1956. And Santa Cruz currently has 5 sister cities. We welcome Peggy Pollard and her team. They're going to share with us a little bit about sister cities and potential partnerships with the school district.
Thank you. Good evening, honorable board members. Thank you for your service to the Santa Cruz City Schools. Globalization is increasingly important. That's what our world is like today. Because of technology, as we were learning about earlier, the world is closer than ever, and it is more and more important for our lives and our careers to be culturally, have intercultural intelligence. We have a wonderful program that we can bring into city schools at zero cost to city schools. It's called Sister Cities Program. We have a PowerPoint, which will show up any moment now. I'm the chair of Sister Cities for Santa Cruz, Peggy Pollard. I just came from a delegation to Kasese, Uganda. We're exploring a sister city relationship with them. But we already have 5 sister cities who have had years of wonderful relationships. Some are more active than others. The sister cities' main gist of sister cities is that we have cultural, educational, and economic exchanges with cities long term through community groups. It could be schools, it could be other nonprofit organizations. There's lots of ways you can have exchanges. best way is if you can go on a delegation to a place, but that's not the only way. Because of our interconnectivity, because of a wonderful thing called the internet, there's a lot of things we can do online having exchanges. So pen pal exchanges is, you can do that online or through pen and paper. My own children in Santa Cruz City Schools, two of them got to have pen pals from Alushka, Ukraine. We can have teacher exchanges who can connect on various curriculum topics. And through all these exchanges, the best thing we develop is the friendships with people in these other sister cities who have a different way of looking at life. There's so much that we learn from them. There's so much that our students in city schools can learn from seeing life in a different way through these other cultures. I would like to introduce the chair of our Japan Sister Cities Subcommittee, Gail McCallum, who will tell you about our relationship with Shingu, Japan.
Peggy, I apologize.
Yeah. We don't know why it's showing up on this computer. It's not showing up on the screen.
My name is Gail McCallum. I'm a Korean faculty and also the chair of the Shingu Japan Subcommittee. And both of my daughters, when they were in eighth grade, got to go to Japan during spring break. And that's the way that I got into the program. It's been going on for about 15 years. We've been sending groups of 8th, 9th, and 10th graders from Santa Cruz to go stay with host families and learn about Japanese culture. And then we also host a whole group of Japanese teenagers to come over here in August and experience Santa Cruz and American life. So it's just a fabulous program. There is other ways for kids to fundraise. There are also some partial scholarships for kids in Santa Cruz County. And it's just a fabulous way of creating friendship between ourselves and people in Japan, and for kids to really experience other cultures very, very deeply. So I'm encouraging people to let the schools know. We've been trying to get the word out in different ways. We just had a great article in the press banner that came out last week, and I think there are little blurbs sometimes in the papers, but the best way are the kids. When I always invite the kids to come and talk about the program, and they're just beside themselves about how life-changing it has been for them to go to Japan, and especially to stay with a family, not just to go and see the culture, but to really, really learn about what it's like to be part of a Japanese family. So just really would love to get the word out more about the program. And by the way, the application is due Friday. I'm already getting applications coming in, but just love to get the word out about this fantastic Sister City program.
Thank you, Gail. I'd like to introduce our chair of our Alushta subcommittee, Andrew Redden.
Good evening, Board of Trustees. Thank you for taking time to listen to us. This is a program that's been active next year, 50 years in Santa Cruz County. Back in 1966, we established our first relationship with Puerto La Cruz in Venezuela. There's some problems down in Venezuela right now that have precluded us from having a full-blown relationship with them. But that will get back on track. Alushta is a city on the Black Sea in the Crimea that was part of the Soviet Union. Some of us are old enough to remember something called the Cold War that went on between ourselves and the Soviet Union. Luckily, there were far-sighted citizens in Santa Cruz back in the early 80s that started talking about trying to break through the Cold War by having a community-to-community relationship. And so there was a relationship that was developed in Alushta, which is right near Yalta. Alushta was a closed city, which basically meant that the only way you got in was to go through a checkpoint. You had to have a pass. You had to be part of a known quantity of why you were there. Nancy Items, who's my mentor in this program, she was told the first time she went to Alushta in 1987 that she was the first American that had come there and was leaving alive. We've had a lot of laughs, but we have dear friends. Unfortunately, right now there's a tug of war going on once again between national governments. Russia has re-annexed the Crimean Peninsula, which includes Alushta. And so that's a matter of international controversy because our government's position is that that's illegal. Bottom line is Sister Cities is not about politics. It's not about what some government leader in Washington or in Moscow or in Kyiv says. It's about individual relationships, people to people, and the idea is that that's how we achieve world peace, is one person at a time, one community at a time. So we actually have a teachers exchange, and we have had teachers come over from Alushta. They've come over several years, and we actually have had Chris Kennedy, who many of you know, started the Penn Health program, Peggy, that your daughters participated, or your children participated in. And it's still a very active program, even though there are governmental problems. So we are recruiting again right now to get a teacher to go over and teach in the schools in Alushta, and then the following year they will send us a teacher back. So it's a great program. We appreciate your support of it. I'll turn this back over to Peggy, who's going to tell you about Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes. So in your packet that I've handed out, we have the Sister Cities brochure that lists all our sister cities. And inside, I snuck in my business card about Kasese, Uganda, which is still a friendship city. Behind that is a Hans Christian Andersen writing contest in Sestri Levante, Italy, which has been our sister city for a long time, longer than I know about. They have an annual contest where Hans Christian Andersen spent his summer, so they put on a contest and collect stories from people who write in the style of Hans Christian Andersen. And so they, a lot of the stories include Santa Cruz culture from people who live here. And we've had, I've been able to be a judge in that contest for a year. It was very fun. We have categories for like kindergarten, preschool age, and then lower ages and high school ages and adult ages. That's a really wonderful thing that we can do as sister cities. So I encourage you to participate in that, find the have teachers that you can broadcast that and use that as part of their curriculum writing contest. We have, as Enda mentioned, two other sister cities, Jinotepe, Nicaragua, Puerto La Cruz, Venezuela. We have two friendship cities that are we're trying out to see if we can become sister cities. I'm involved with Kasese, Uganda, just spent 10 days there. They have a lot of kids in Kasese, Uganda. We visited a lot of schools. They are very eager to have relationships with Santa Cruz schools. And there's really a lot that can be done when you have the motivation on both sides. That's the most important thing. So we did bring art materials over, which Lilith inspired. She came to one of our meetings. And Roxy Goa brought a suitcase full of art materials for the Kasese kids, and we're hoping to have an art exchange with them. That should be interesting, Ugandan art. One of the big things in Kasese is sustainable projects with energy and agriculture. That can, it very well is at university college level, but there's also opportunity for high school students who'd be interested in sustainability projects. There's a lot of nonprofits in Kasese that are working on those things, so great opportunity for that. Pen pals, too. There was, in the past, there's been pen pal exchanges with high school students in Kasese, and also mentoring for the high school students there who aids education amongst their fellow students. So there's already been those kind of programs going on, exchanges with Santa Cruz school students. The other friendship city that we have is Chivarico, Cuba. For the past 30 years, while there's been an embargo, there's still been delegations going back and forth, and so there's opportunity there as well. The sister cities, in general, is about friendships, it's about culture and educational exchanges, and there's such a riches that we can develop in our city schools from those other cultures, and that they can learn from us as well. So I really encourage you to find ways for the city schools to become involved. One thing I would ask, if there are teachers or people in the schools who say that they want to be involved, we'd love to have them involved in our sister city subcommittees. Either as Lilith came to us and said she'd love to have all the sister cities involved, which is very doable. But if there's teachers have different interests, and so if there's ones that have particular interest in certain cities, that would be great. Or if there's a type of curriculum that they want to explore with all the cities. So we would just love to have be able to get in touch with those particular people, those teachers or leaders in the schools. And we'd also love to have an annual presentation here about our sister city relationships. So I hopefully there's some way that you'll be able to see the great PowerPoint and the pictures that we just
We have it on our.
We were flipping through as you were talking.
All of our board members already have it.
We do.
All right. And one of those pictures was, a lot of people don't realize the Japanese Cultural Fair started from Sister Cities. It's part of our Sister Cities program. So I'm looking forward to say something.
Hello, everybody. Nice to be here tonight and have this chance to talk to you about this new adventure that I am doing with Sister Cities. For those of you who don't know me, I teach art and sometimes English or ESL at SoCal High. I just this summer kind of had this inspiration that I wanted to be involved with Sister Cities as a way to do art exchanges. And surprisingly, that same day I went to their first meeting, they the person who does the art exchange with Xingu said that she was retiring, and so somehow I got nominated, and that nominated the post. And it's been delightful so far. I've really just started in this activity. But one of the reasons that I was so excited about the possibilities was because when I was a teenager in Santa Cruz, I participated in several activities in which I got to travel to other countries. They have been the most memorable experiences of my life, I think. I don't know if any of you guys remember Peace Child, which was a big kind of intercultural exchange. I'm not sure, but it was, we went to Costa Rica and Nicaragua when I was 15, I think, and did a show with kids, and they came here and visited us, and it was one of the most powerful experiences, intercultural experiences I've ever had in my life, and it continues to be. The other thing I realize is even though we have this shrinking world because of globalization, the reality is many kids have never had much of an opportunity to actually interact with people from another culture. And I think that it's something that would really enhance any teenager's life if they had an opportunity to hold a piece of art that was from another kid in one of our sister cities. I think that's a powerful experience. It can connect us. So Sister Cities, like, it seems like a natural fit for our desire to have our students be global citizens and have empathy and compassion for people all over the world and have a chance to recognize them as people just like us. So I'm looking forward to thinking of ways we can work with Sister Cities. I'm already telling kids about the possibility of going to Xingu and encouraging them to apply. And I'm hoping that you can support Sister Cities and pass the word around to teachers about the opportunities that they could to create something interesting and new. All right, thank you very much for your time.
Do we have any questions?
Thank you. The excellent slideshow.
One thing is, in October 25th, we're going to do a presentation on our trip to Uganda, so please come and join us. Harvey West Clubhouse from 2 to 4, Sunday, October 25th. I put a flyer there.
Oh, you know what? I need to plug in the... Sorry.
That's a really good picture.
It's a beautiful
presentation.
It's gonna take a little bit for my computer to recognize this. Hang on one second.
Okay,
any questions?
My brain just conked out. Oh, is Japan the only program that students are going to now?
That's what?
Yes. Is that the only program the students actually go to?
Yes.
At this moment, yes.
Yeah. In the past, have they?
There was a soccer team that went over to Volusia about 25 years ago. Then there was something called a youth academy, which might have been under your auspices, that went over there about 20 years ago. But right now, it's the teacher exchange. And then there are young women, high school and college level, that do come over and work at the boardwalk during the summer from Volusia.
I've heard about those, yeah.
But we will look forward to starting a student delegation over there once we get this visa business squared away with the government.
Okay. And I've heard about this for so long, and it's really great to actually hear this presentation and to realize that we could have our students involved. So thank you.
Ella?
Hi, yeah, you mentioned high school chemical exchanges. Is there a way that's like actively happening now and I just haven't heard about it, or is there something we could do to like implement and encourage participation right now?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's actively happening now. It happened in the past. The one in Uganda was with Kirby School and I think another school in the area. But it does take at least a teacher to say, I want to make it happen, and it's very doable. So just say, send us a teacher who says, I want to do it, and we'll do it. Yeah.
Didi?
My son went to Xingu and had the time of his life, and so I want to thank you for making that possible for him. He still talks about it, and he's a senior now. I had the same question about other student exchange opportunities, and these are amazing places for kids to go, and there's nothing else except Xingu at this point in time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all requires the community to get involved, and so the most likely place that we could jumpstart something with would be Nicaragua. They'd love to have our kids come down there, and they could certainly do a Spanish immersion-type program down there. The problem is getting their kids to come back here, because our government is very uptight about people from certain countries coming here. So that would be a difficulty. It couldn't necessarily be a true exchange. We hope that their kids would be able to come back, but there's just no guarantee. But we have an open invitation from people in Jinotepe, Nicaragua, to send a group of students down there. So that is something that if you as a board wanting us to support or get behind, we can certainly discuss that.
This picture had the teacher exchange from Alushka. Chris Kennedy there. And I think there are teachers came as well. Youth delegations. It's very different. The way the students behave is such a, you know, it's different than how our American students are. We learn a lot from each other just by being there. Conservation options, writing contests. We visit so many schools there, and they would love to have relations with our city schools. And they're just starting to be able to get on the internet in some places. So, but they still have pencil and paper, and they can write mail letters.
That's a shock.
Okay. And Chivalrico, Cuba. It's also so. Thanks so
Jeremy?
Much for listening.
I
have you all involved.
I have
these pictures I'll give to Jeremy in case you have teachers and other people that
we apologize for all of the technical
issues.
Thank you. All right. I was going to say that I think what will need to happen is other teachers will need to just get inspired as Lilith has and sort of step up. And if we could find an English teacher, even at the middle school or the high school level, to encourage the Hans Christian Andersen, I want to say fairy tale writing contest.
Yeah.
I don't think that's wrong.
Already all left, right?
I think that's what it's going to take. But I do think we've made a big step forward. And the pen pal thing sounds really good, too. So that's how I think it'll just happen. If we get 3 or 4 teachers in Santa Cruz City Schools who can get on board with this through the art, through the writing, those are the 2 things that come to my mind. And I do have one final question. How many of the kids who go to Xingu come from Santa Cruz City Schools? Do we have any numbers on that?
We don't track it specifically, but my guess is it's about 2/3.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to thank you guys again for being here. Thanks.
Okay, Sheila?
So just first of all, I wanted to say I've heard about this from Chris Kennedy's class for years, so it's really kind of delightful to realize it. The effect it's had, and I hope that some of the teachers will do the same thing. First of all, when you say that the Italy one, the historic connection is through early fishing families, does that mean our fishing families?
Is that what it means?
Yeah. A number of the fishing families here actually came from San Francisco after the 1906 earthquake up there. And so there was a flotilla of fishing boats that came from there. But they come from Riva Tragosa, which is a suburb of Sestri Levante.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
There is a direct connection between the Italian families here and our
And is that why we started?
That was the reason for the connection, yes.
Okay. And my last question is, you're looking for teachers to go to...
Alushka.
Yes. And is Alushka the Ukraine? And are they guaranteed to come back without being dead?
Absolutely. Chris Kennedy was our first teacher who went over on the teacher exchange, and she had a moderate time over there. The only issue right now is that the U.S. government's frowning upon people going to the Crimea because they consider it to be illegally taken over by Russia.
But it's no longer as dangerous as it was.
It's still what?
It's no longer as dangerous as it was a few years back.
Actually, Crimea has never been dangerous. The problems in Ukraine are over in eastern Ukraine.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for all this.
And thank you for your presentation. We're going to take a short recess now.
Yes, your artist of the year. That's family from Sestri. And you go to Aldo's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeff Dunn. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Here.
I didn't realize that.
The gift of the gift.
She was just going like, it was kind of not a problem.
Yeah.
I can't wear heels.
I can't at all. Not even the tiniest.
And they put Fortnite and they. Which is awesome. They don't strap on. Yeah. And I don't.
Very, very faint.
Even these have, because I love them so much. It's starting to lose them.
Yeah, and then my
foot's
like.
But it's almost
the same thing. So they keep swinging.
What can
you
do?
Okay, regroup.
I bet you can put it back up again.
We'll see if the clicker works.
Oh, good. Yes.
Funny night. Everybody take coffee. I think we're all over.
Okay.
Then I won't be the only lone sign. Ballots drop Monday.
At least the mailer's out.
Looks good. People are starting to understand it.
It was well done. It's really just fine.
I mean, you can see the desktop on the laptop.
Nagging.
I know. But it's awful. And yet, I wake up at 3 in the morning. There you go.
But it's not all so new. You know?
The last time I worked with her anymore was last year at this time.
But you think?
I've never had this happen before. So I
said,
because it was definitely connected to the computer. That's why you were looking at its desktop.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's such a.
So there was no lack of connection.
But it was like. I just like things.
He said that the last 2 days were better.
It's a lesson in life, isn't it?
Finish or men. Nothing like
I'm
that.
I'm a linear person,
so many
too.
And there are people who probably thrive in those kinds of environments.
But for me, to get a lot of things done, I have to really organize. And I have to know what I'm doing every day. Mm-hmm. And I go down.
And I've got my calendar, and I've got my to-do list.
And I can get derailed, and then I feel... I guess it's a scary feeling.
It's an unsettling. When you're out of your element, it's that, like, I couldn't be a technology teacher. I couldn't be a computer teacher. Because there's so much, they're all on their own device. It will be okay. Let me show you this cool picture.
So you take every class every day. You take your classes every day.
I've been taught every day for now.
It was awesome. It was so fun to watch them.
We had a wife and I had a 30-year reunion on Saturday.
Okay, are we ready to
start? Yeah.
I forgot to announce that Harbor High's play starts this weekend.
Which one is it?
It's
it's really funny. Santa Cruz High and Harvard doing the same play. They didn't realize that. It's called You Can't Take It With You. So this weekend and next weekend. Your kids like watching theater?
I'm watching theater.
Yeah, it's really fun. And the Harvard kids do all the work. They make the costumes. They build the sets. It's an amazing thing.
Friday night and
it'll be Friday night and Saturday night. I'll send a message to the board. Friday night, Saturday night, this weekend and next weekend. They're in Tech Week all this week. Pound that gavel.
They're like gray cats.
Yes. We're going to reconvene. Our next item is 8.3.3, New Business Resolution 2015-16, College Awareness Month.
I wanted to share a little bit tonight about the evolution of the S4C. I'm really excited about the direction that the collaborative is moving, and I wanted to share a little bit about it with you tonight. I was at a steering committee meeting on Monday, and they said, well, why don't we all give presentations to our boards in November and bring a resolution with it? And I said, I'm giving a presentation to my board on Wednesday, so I'm going to bring you a resolution next month, and it won't come with the presentation. So October is College Awareness Month, and it supports both goals number 1 and 3 for our school district. The Santa Cruz County College commitment, the goal of S4C is to improve career and college readiness and completion for students in Santa Cruz County so that every student succeeds. And the vision is that all students will successfully meet their college and career goals. Mission, prepare every child in Santa Cruz for every option, really. It's every child have every option. Membership, as you know, is all the K-12 districts in the county, Cabrillo, CSUMB, San Jose State, and UCSC. Also, the County Office of Education and ROP. Some of the activities in this last year included a community planning meeting, our last year's October College Awareness Month, the fourth grade experience, which has been held in the spring and it's been revised based on teacher feedback, and it's going to be an open house this weekend. We're providing some buses for families if they want to attend on Saturday. I think it's going to be an ever-evolving experience. We want all of our fourth graders to learn what Cabrillo is about. The spring experience was difficult to do with all of the fourth graders from all over the county on one day, and the logistics of it were tricky, but it's a continuous improvement process. The seventh grade experience, all of our seventh graders in the county visit either UCSC or CSUMB every spring. We have a website with updates to the community with information about the collaborative. We look at our EAP scores. There was a Career Pathways Trust grant application that many of our teachers worked on. We did not get that grant, but we're hopeful that as we move forward, we'll be better prepared to apply for grants, especially after the successful initial Gates work. These are draft goals. One of the things that we worked on this summer was really looking at how do we measure what we're trying to do. I'm not going to read them to you, but I'll let you look at them. They're aligned with the goals that we have as a school district. We're excited that we're going to be implementing a TK-12 data system that illuminates for all of the districts in the county, which will help us track progress together. We're working on developing an online common system for tracking high school graduation, post-secondary training programs, college acceptance, and enrollment in persistence in those programs within our region. I met with someone from, I always confuse these, it's not CalPass, not CalPads. We have two different tracking systems, but CalPass is what allows us to track students that participate in our K-12 systems into community college certificate programs or into community college degree programs and into CSU and UC programs. So we can see which of our students enter and persist, make it through those programs, and we're working together to make sure all of our different local educational agencies are participating in that so we can keep track. We really want to work on fostering opportunities for apprenticeships and internships and other job-related experiences and opportunities, and this is an area we really feel like we need to grow as S4C, and we're going to put some focused effort there. Continuing with the counseling collaborative, develop a comprehensive action plan to accelerate the goals for college and career readiness. And we also want to develop aligned professional development plans based on the identified needs that are a part of our Gates planning grant. So our collaborative structure, this summer we created and approved bylaws. We created a director job description and an evaluation process. We didn't have that in place before. And we created a steering committee voting structure and process. We worked on building a mission and being real clear about what we're trying to do and what we're going to measure. We've been looking at other models of collaboratives across the state. We designed this year's commitments around improving math scores and professional development and training and increased articulation efforts around Common Core. We completed the Gates Planning Grant and we finalized the Gates College and Career Readiness Grant application. We hired our executive director, Connie Benton. Connie Benton is a retired principal from SLV and retired associate superintendent from the County Office of Education. She stepped in about a month ago and she's already been a great asset in helping us move forward with our grant requirements and helping the group move forward. We also set up a kind of governance structure for our steering committee, including chair and vice chair and secretary, so we're a bit more organized than we were before. Our deliverables for the Gates Planning Grant. The Gates Grant is to support our collaborative with the implementation of Common Core. When they're in process of a needs assessment, we had a really strong response from the teachers in our school district in response to the planning grant. We ended up with 50% of the teachers in the county responding to the needs assessment. We felt really good about that. It's not as high as we wanted, but we know that over the hill they only got 20% when they did their survey. So we feel like we have some good baseline information to begin to have our teacher advisory group, who is a new teacher advisory component of S4C, and our operations group, to be able to really look at that information. Look at local data. We're looking at the CASP results. We're looking at our EAP data. We're looking at our algebra grades across the county as a means for us to think about how are we doing with implementation of Common Core mathematics and what could we do together to leverage best practices and expertise in the county. We're also establishing a high school higher education articulation committee, and like I said, finding a system for tracking enrollment and persistence in college. There are more deliverables. I'll let you look at them for just a minute. We're going to have a community forum in January that you'll be invited to. And you'll have an opportunity to learn about the work of S4C, more specifically with other community leaders. Learn about Common Core implementation and some of the challenges around that. If you're interested in coming, we'll be inviting other local electeds and community leaders in business to that as well. This next month, I'm visiting Shasta County to visit their collaborative. They have something called Reach Higher Shasta, which is a cradle to career initiative. And we aren't cradle to career, we're TK to career in CNS4C, but with many of the same purposes. And we have to write and submit our implementation grant by the end of January 2016. We're going to be writing for the, we asked, you know, so we had heard $1 million was what we could write for. They said it's a little high, so we've been told $900,000 is what we can ask for as a county. So again, in Santa Cruz, our college and career readiness is about having every child having every option. We've been working to increase A to G completion, participation in honors and AP classes, maintaining extensive career technical education offerings, and I understand that there's a new CTE competitive grant coming out for the state for expanding upon your current CTE offerings, and we'll need to work with S4C and ROP to see, you know, what does that mean for us and how can we participate in that. For your planning workshops, our college visits, AVID, the Green Manufacturing Engineering Construction Academy, the Sustainable Agriculture Science Programs, Math and Humanities Academies, continued parent, teacher, and student education on post-secondary options. They're all part of our local plan to make sure every child, again, has every option at graduation. Some important success indicators for us in Santa Cruz City Schools. From 2008-09 to last year, we're up 17 percentage points in the number of students completing A to G requirements. Latino students in the last 5 years have doubled the percentage of meeting A to G at the same time that we've had increasing numbers of Latino students in our high schools. Low-income students completing A to G almost again doubled the percentage of students meeting those requirements. Ninth graders passing Algebra 1 with a C or better for the first time when they take the course, 57% to 79%. Enrollment in AP and honors coursework, so it's up 230% in the last 5 years. This is an unduplicated count. 2015 graduates earned more than $623,000 in local scholarships. So it's just a quick summary of where we are, what we've been working on. It's very much aligned with our district goals, and I am serving as the steering committee chair for S4C this year, and I'm really committed to this work. I think it's particularly important for us as a school district because we have 6 feeder districts that feed into our high schools, and having some alignment, some shared measures, some shared professional learning is really, really critical, I think, in ensuring that we have a vertical plan, and that has a significant impact on Soquel High School and Harbor High School, and ensuring that all the kids come with the same level of preparation and the same supports as we move forward. And I see this Gates Planning Grant as really an opportunity for us to begin to become better aligned, better articulated, and have some tools and resources to move forward and support our students better.
Hey, Jeremy.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate that. I have just a nuts and bolts question. Mm-hmm. So let's say we'll round it up to $1 million. Mm-hmm. Do they simply divide that number by every student in the county, and each school district gets a certain amount according to how many students they have? So Pajaro gets a little bit more than 3 times we get. Are there other criteria for how that money gets divvied up? Thanks.
So what we're thinking about really is building systems and capacity. So it wouldn't be divvied up to the different districts. S4C is its own entity. So S4C would oversee those resources.
Okay.
And then say there'd be training for the math coaches across the county, and there'd be opportunities for teachers to be released and come together and look at a math performance task that was given across all the 3rd grades across the county. One of the things that we were talking about in the steering committee, and really these are just initial thoughts because we're just doing the needs assessment. We haven't convened the teacher. We won't convene the teachers for another 2 weeks. But we've started with SMI and as a tool, as a universal assessment. Could we have a common universal assessment for mathematics across the county that we were all using as another data point for us to look at as educators about, you know, and to monitor student progress and also to identify what are the needs? What are the instructional needs for, and what are the intervention needs and what are the professional learning needs based on some tools that we could all use and have the same tool besides the CASP? Because the CASP is really, and the interim assessments for CASP are designed to tell us how ready are kids for that end of year test, but that really doesn't give us the kind of information that we need in the classrooms and as teachers to know what is it that, when I look at my students, you know, how many of them understand fractions and decimals, and how many of them need remediation in that? And how do I address that as a teacher? What are some great strategies I could use that I might be able to learn from someone else? And
one quick follow-up mm-hmm. question. So the money comes to S4C. Mm-hmm. S4C pays for a coordinator to do all this work. Then does S4C, and S4C runs these programs that can be countywide, everybody's can join. Can S4C then give specific grants to one district or another that seems to be doing really special work in an area, or will all the programs be support as you described?
You know, we're really trying to bring our districts together.
Got it.
And bring, you know, one of the things that's kind of challenging sometimes is there's only a couple people teaching. There's only a couple people teaching Algebra 2 in a high school. And there's, across the county, we might have 15 teachers teaching Algebra 2.
Got it.
And that's an opportunity for folks to come together and learn together and share what they're doing. And so I think it's really about, and the whole goal of the Gates, I'm going to a Carnegie training next week. And the whole goal of this Gates resource is about collective impact and working to try to get collaboratives, groups of people to leverage what's working best in different areas, find bright spots, or to try and learn together and maybe fail together, but also, you know, be able to work together towards a particular goal. And, you know, since S4C has started, we haven't only seen the A to G completion rates go up for our district, they've gone up across the county.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Allison.
What does it mean to be transfer ready in math?
To be transfer ready in math means that you're ready to go on into college level mathematics.
And what it,
statistics or pre-calculus or college level
math? So it means that you have mastered Algebra 2.
Algebra 2, yeah. Okay. And then I just wanted to make a comment about the Ivy League project. So the Ivy League project is a wonderful initiative that brings first-generation students to visit Ivy League schools. Ron Sandage, I had a conversation with him actually at the Food What, and he talked about it. And I'm not even on, sorry. And it seems like it's very in line with the articulation piece of this. So it might be just something that the committee would like to look into. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about it. So that's
yeah,
why I'm
and it, I mean, the focus is specifically to bring first-generation students to tour Ivy League schools and to consider Ivy League schools as they as they start applying to college.
Okay, I actually have like four questions, so I'm doing this when these two go together. This is math, and I know we've discussed this before. My feeling is if Algebra 1 and 2 are college ready, we really ought to be getting Algebra 1 and 2 down and worry about the rest later. But I'm wondering if anybody in this process is looking at the Algebra 1, 2, 2 shift. In other words, people get C's in Algebra 1, do they then fail Algebra 2? Is that working? is the grade in Algebra 2 really indicative of how well they've learned, Algebra 1 is indicative of how well they've learned algebra so that they can actually go on.
Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not.
But is anybody looking at that? Because that, yes. To me, that's the measure, not the grade. The measure is, can they do it? And can they go on to do the next part? The grade has so many variables beyond that. And so all I wanted to really know is if anybody's looking at it. And are they looking at one of the things, being a developmental psychologist, the implementing a new math program mid-career for kids has all kinds of effects that wouldn't have been there if they started with kindergarten and worked up. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if anybody's looking at that in terms of how the kids that started in 6th and 7th and 8th and they're going into high school, are they making that adjustment or not?
You know, we are still working with our implementation of Common Core in the high school. And our middle school math teachers made a decision to go all out, and they all went in together and were fully trained and implemented Common Core together. We have two other middle schools that feed into our high school system, so it's a very complex equation.
Well, but that's part of why I'm asking, because this is S4C. Mm-hmm. Are they looking at it?
Are we looking at it? Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's us. And yes, we're looking at it.
Okay.
And we're talking about it.
Okay. That's question one.
Patty?
Mine's just a comment. Along the lines of, you don't know what you don't know. So initially when I was on the board and S4C was doing the fourth grade visit to colleges, I wasn't quite understanding the value or impact of it, but I do want to say that now that my son is in college and the choice of college he had made, his motivation was because when he was in fourth grade, we drove through a campus that I didn't realize that he was listening to the stories up front of the car of what was possible and what you can see. And so at 9 or 10 years old, that became a motivating factor to how hard he continued to try in school. So I want to thank the collaborative for offering that, and then getting seventh grade so that it is an attainable goal and it has it's tangible when they can walk through those campuses. So thank you.
Did you have more questions?
Answer the phone.
Speaker.
So one of my questions is, or actually maybe this is just a suggestion, the fourth grade college experience. I think you hit the nail on the head with how hard it is to do the whole large group, but I also think it's hard for the fourth graders. And I was wondering if in the process anybody is interviewing the fourth graders about the experience. Because I'm really good at ignoring this stuff, but I have a feeling
we are having technical.
I could just keep talking.
The teachers wanted us.
There's a gremlin in the system.
It's
October. Next thing you know, they'll lock all the doors down, and we're stuck here. That actually happened to me once at a doctor's office. yes, because. I think it's interesting, like the teachers would know a lot, but it would be interesting to see what...
Just talk without your microphone. Yeah.
Oh, is the microphone doing it?
No.
Oh, okay. What would be interesting to me is how the kids are perceiving it at the fourth grade level, and I'm just wondering if anybody's thought about that.
They've talked to the kids.
They have.
Kids
okay,
even.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I didn't have to go on quite so long then. And my final thing is, this is my thing. Okay, this is College Awareness Month. So there's two parts to this. One is, are we going to have Career Awareness Month? And number two, is S4C supposed to do both or just one? Because, boy, to me it's not enough to say, oh, we're doing careers because we have ROP. We need to be thinking next generation, the future, about careers too. And we need to be thinking about what we can do like this where the whole county is making the effort and coming together on the career level, and not just with the ROP we already have, but like I just heard that Watsonville has added several
welding classes because they're paying attention to where the jobs are. And I think that I'm wondering if that's S4C that's doing that, or do we need to have a whole other push in that direction where we're looking comprehensively at new kinds of jobs and looking at careers instead of as the little stepchild to college.
That is a part of it's college and career. That is
it's
definitely
that, though, college awareness resolution.
Okay, but part of college awareness fund are career inventories and exploring where your interests are and looking at, you know, what do you want to pursue and where can you go to learn about what you want to pursue. That the activities in the elementary schools, that the activities in the high school, you know, I'm going to let Angela speak to the high schools. I saw the list of activities in the elementary schools, and they definitely included career exploration. I know they do that in the middle schools. I'm going to let Angela speak
to
a little bit.
So can I just say there's a very big difference between, yeah, they have these activities too, and front and center saying, we are seeing that our kids aren't getting careers, and we would like to be able to elevate the idea of careers. I think you'd get people in this business, people in this community involved if we could do that, where we were, let's put our mind to what we can do career-wise.
But like I said when I was talking about the goals, we're looking to try to get more measurable goals in the career areas. Mm-hmm. It's tougher to have career measures, mm-hmm. but part of what we have to be able to do that is start to track where kids end up, mm-hmm. and that's part of what the CalPAS system is about. It's complicated and it's hard.
I don't say this to criticize all of this, mm-hmm. but simply that every time I see it, and I'm not talking about here at Santa Cruz City Schools, mm-hmm. countywide, every time I see it, it is so oriented towards college and really university, you know, and how do you get there? How do you do this hard thing? You look at it all by itself and elevate it to the same stature.
So we know that kids need post-secondary learning, mm-hmm. whether they're going into certificate programs and careers, because of the research and the job information out there all tells us that. Kids need more than a high school diploma. It doesn't necessarily have to be an AA. It doesn't necessarily have to be a four-year degree, but they need more training and those things. So we have set it as a goal and a focus. I'm going to tell you really, right now, we're trying to get this Gates grant written and in the kind of the capacity of the people involved. There's full-time teachers, full-time administrators, and what I'm going to say that I don't think we're going to get a lot of career work done before January because we're working to try to get this focus on mathematics across the county and this work on to get the Gates grant. Is it a long-term goal for S4C? Absolutely.
So I'm willing to wait. And that might mean I have to stay on the board longer. But, you know, I'm not meaning right now, but I think that if we don't keep going, yeah, of course careers is in it too, we are not going to get there. Because the up-and-coming career areas in this county, they're thinking ahead, they're thinking towards the future, and we're not going to get there if we just keep going, yeah.
We're continuing to look for the Link Learning Grants uh-huh. and the other resources that would support that. Uh-huh. And that is still a focus and that's still a part of what we're doing, but I just got to be honest and say I don't think we're going to get to it until we get through getting this application.
Right. Just don't forget. Okay, that's all.
Do we have a motion to adopt this resolution?
Move to approve.
Allison moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Dee Dee seconds. It's a resolution, so...
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, item 8.3.4 is also a resolution, 21-15-16.
Good evening, President Busk, members of the board, and the public bringing forth tonight. As just mentioned, Resolution 21-1516, which is moving forward from our last meeting regarding the resolution to finance our current certificate of participation This is setting us up to complete the documents. We recently went to bid on the project. It was sent to on RFP to 11 major financial institutions. We received bids back from six, and our interest rates came in anywhere between 2.24 to a high of 3.28, with the cluster around 2.6, and we chose the lowest bidder that came in at 2.24, which is a commercial bank out of North Carolina, which also met our needs that we can potentially do an early payoff on the note if we're successful with our next venture, which possibly be next year. So it met the guidelines we were seeing, but also does us protect our potential cash outflow from our facility dollars in case we have major emergencies in the interim for the next year. So we're extremely pleased with the work from our financial advisor and our partners in the group. And so we'll be coming forward as we finish this up. There's a resolution being passed tonight on behalf of the board, acting as Santa Cruz City School Board, to continue with the resolution in order for us to complete the financing.
Questions, comments? Questions from the public?
I've got a question. So just so we're refinancing the certificates of participation. Is that right?
No, we have a brand new certificate, a brand new debt to replace the fill at Soquel High School. That was $890,000. And then we had a balloon payment that is due of principal only of $806,000 at the end of this fiscal year.
The balloon payment is
from a 2010 financing.
Okay. But the strategy, if I'm understanding correctly, is to be able to make a to repay all of this if the November 2016 initiative passes.
That was the action we took at the last meeting, correct?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I would just hate to see us assuming debt and not retiring it right away.
Right. We could retire the debt and then have absolutely no cash flow in case of an emergency. So that's the exchange we're making right now.
You're talking about the $800,000.
$806,000.
Yeah.
Balloon.
But we also spent money on the field.
Correct. We had to, based upon the fact that it was no longer eligible to play the one.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Got it. Thank you.
My question was answered on the dollar amount of the second, or the balloon, because I was wondering why we were going for the larger loan, but with the possibility of the 16. Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Do we have Jim.
One quick question. Jim, that balloon payment, although was refinanced in 2010, reflects back way before that, doesn't it?
This is, I believe, from the financing that occurred in 2010, which could be I wasn't here back then, could be a compilation of two other COPs.
It was.
So it could be a compilation of those two.
And we won't go into the history, but okay.
Right.
It was.
Okay. Right. Good. And what this does is this gives us, what we had projected about 2 weeks ago, would be about $212,000 a year. Dropped it down to about $208,000 just overnight with the interest payments, the rate that we received. And like I said, the institution really understood the fact that we would pay it off hopefully within 18 months, 24 months based upon the financing of the next documents. Yes. If we had the ability and if our facilities were somewhat maintained in the past couple of years, I wouldn't hesitate to free up, as Barry mentioned, about the reserve that's there in facilities. But with all the tremendous needs we have district-wide, you know, one sewer line that breaks or anything else along the way, the Santa Cruz High School boiler, et cetera, we just need to be prepared for that in the interim.
Move approval.
Second. Okay, it's Patty and Sheila.
Thank you.
It's a resolution.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, item 8.3.5 is board policies updates.
So this is a first reading, potentially a final reading if you want it to be so, or we can bring it back to the next board meeting, of some board updates. And they all are about just changes in the law and things that adjustments to policy based on recommendations from CSVA. Are there any particular questions or concerns about any of them?
It was just a little hard to read the proposed in this format, so I did my best. But I took my question is regarding the organization. Mm-hmm. There was no mention of the student representatives, and I know, was that unique to our board, or was that just, were you just recommending additional information or additional language in addition to, or, you know what I'm saying, are we cutting out that part about the students, or how is that being handled, if you know what I'm talking about? I don't even remember what it was.
I didn't. I'm just looking at it right now. We weren't intentionally leaving out the students. So I may need to go back and look at that.
Okay. That was the only thing I noticed. It was mm-hmm. quite a lengthy. It was very long. It just probably doesn't be as wordy as it is.
We tried to keep it as close to what our current policy is as possible, in bringing the changes that they recommended. And I don't remember seeing anything about students in that draft mm-hmm. policy. Do you? Mm-mm. So we'll have to go back and look at that because we don't want to see them not be a part of it.
May I ask a question? What was difficult for you to look at the policy?
Oh, this is to look at the old and the new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to compare.
I would, in this kind of form, this particular type of information for me, the way I think.
What would be preferable for
hard copy, but I don't really want hard copy. I mean, I did it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? I just like, literally have them next to each other to kind of look back and forth.
Or could you highlight the changes in?
That would work.
I'll be happy to go through and highlight changes, but I have to be honest with you. I don't get them highlighted from CSVA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then I think to myself, what if I miss one? What if I'm highlighting stuff and I miss something?
You shouldn't do that. This text will just change. It's hard to highlight.
And I think the guide sheets are what they rely on to tell you this is what we're changing. But it often involves two or three paragraphs of different wording to change a simple thing from CSVA. Mm-hmm. And so if we were to start highlighting the words that change between the two policies, I often think it might be more confusing than less confusing because so many words change for what really was a simple idea.
I just was commenting that I didn't do hard enough. I didn't look hard enough. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just hoping to be able to find a way that would be better for you.
Yeah, thank you.
You know.
Don't worry about it. We don't do this all the time.
Yeah,
that's
so
true.
I don't think there's very often preparing for us. Thank you.
So, I am along the lines of Deb for me, and if there's any way to split screen so that we can have item one, original, and there, then I can go back and forth. That's my process to see what is actually changed, because when I read a page and then flip a page, what's proposed
so
sometimes
more. So would you prefer that I take the two policies and try to combine them into one document, having one page?
No, if there's any way for this device to split the screen saying page one, policy 1A.
I don't think there is, but here's what I would suggest then. As with each board meeting, I'm still posting our books online.
And then just print those out.
Or you could, I would be happy to send you Word documents of our policies when we have these changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you could just open up a reduced size. You can open up the two windows, and you could open each of them up in a reduced size instead of a full screen size. So why don't we make that our new policy? That when we have policies that come to you, I will send you the current and the new policies that are proposed. And in a Word document form, a real simple Word document form, and then you can just open them up as you like and look at them comparatively. Would that work for
everybody? That's more work for you.
Oh, it's no big deal. I have to have them in Word.
I have them all in Word
document form to prepare them for the board book.
Okay.
So it's simply a matter of putting them in some kind of a little zip file and sending them out to you, and I'm very happy to do that.
Yeah, that would work.
I just want to see what would work best for you guys.
Sheila? So first I want to have a policy that says that somebody will show Sheila how to do that. Because I don't know how to bring them up next to each other.
Next time you come in to talk with Chris, I'll show you.
Okay, that's going to be soon. And I really appreciate you explaining, because it has driven me crazy in paper and on here, why they gave it to us the way we do and they don't highlight what the changes.
Yeah.
But it's the first time I've understood that the changes are probably spread throughout, and they don't really want to do it, which makes me feel a little bit better about the fact
that you feel like, I agree with Deb, you feel like you're not catching everything.
Well, and it's also very difficult, to be perfectly frank, to be, you know, speaking as the in defense of CSBA, it's very difficult for them to say this is what's different because our policies are often customized for us.
Yeah,
so they don't know what's in our policy, so they can't say these are the things that are different from your current policy because they don't know what, I mean, they would have to go through literally every single district's current policy and then try to do a matchup, which of course they don't have the manpower to do. So they just say, this is a revised policy. They don't even compare it to their old policy. They just say, you know, based on changes in the law, and we've really worked with CDE, and, you know, this is a good example of that is we had a huge auditing last year from FPM, and they wanted some very specific changes in our UPC policy, and poor Eric Gross worked very diligently to try and tell me what all those changes were, and I was just furious because I was like, what are we paying CSBA for? Yes, this isn't already covered.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? It was. We were just so slow in our adoption process that when it finally came forward, which is the policy you have right now, you know, we realized that we are just catching up with what they proposed in July, and poor Eric's, all his problems with FPM would have been over if we had just adopted this right away in July, instead of him working so hard to try and comply with this auditing process. So they do work very diligently with the CDE and with every organization they need to make sure that we are getting a really comprehensive sample, but we still might want to customize it for our own district. So, you know.
Well, yeah, and now I feel a little like I'm going to be less annoyed with them every time I do it. but also that, you know, all we can do is the best we can because it's an imperfect system.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yes, thank you.
Do we have a recommendation? Motion?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No problem. Along those lines of customizing these for our district, the board policy 4131, page C, it deals with staff development, and number 11 says knowledge of topics related to employee health, safety, and security. And it lists our other board policies as references that have to do with employee health, safety, and security. So it lists a board policy on hazardous substances, another one on sexual harassment, employee safety. And we have a unique board policy that this board approved recently on workplace bullying, which calls for staff development time to make sure that faculty know that it's there. So I'd like to suggest that we include our board policy on workplace bullying in this list of board policies that staff are given in service training on along with these that are their standard ones.
Is that after number 7?
I'm saying that.
Say?
No. I'm saying that right after number 11.
Yeah.
Knowledge of topics related to employee health, safety, and security.
Mm-hmm. In our current.
I'm looking at the
proposed
revised.
Mm.
But it wasn't in our current. It was sexual harassment, exposure control to bloodborne pathogens.
Well, it probably didn't exist when we approved our current.
Okay. And it was a layer on.
We made it.
Yeah, okay.
So, comments, thoughts?
On that particular issue? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think it makes sense.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then it should be reflected in the motion?
Well, is it a motion, or do you need a motion to do that? Or
no, that's right.
So
it could be a first reading, yes. We don't have to.
So I motion that this be a first read through and that we bring it back next meeting. It'll allow us more time to go through those points and to perhaps put an addendum to reflect what Mr. Christian brought forward.
And also the student stuff. So
and the student stuff. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it will be. I don't think we need to motion that.
We just said this is the first reading.
This is the first reading. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Item 8.3.6 is another resolution, 22-15-16, the week of the administrator.
So this is revised from the original agenda. Molly was at the Personnel Institute last week and found out that ACSA actually change the week of the administrator from the spring to the fall, and we realized, oh, that's next week. And we were kind of ambitious and thought, we can pull this off, we can get this together. And I had a conversation with Molly on Monday, and I said, you know what, I really think we need to give ourselves another week to make this happen. So we are bringing forward not October 11th through the 17th, but the 19th through the 23rd as the week of the administrator. And at our next meeting, we'll bring forward the week, the annual weeks of the teacher and classified, which will happen in the spring as we have in the past. But because our professional organization has moved this annual week to the fall, we'd like to make sure we're in alignment with it, or we'll be a week off. But we'll get closer as we move into next year. So,
are there any questions?
The week of the administrator shouldn't cause administrators stress.
No, no.
Right? Sounds like philosophically.
I want to know if we could have a week of the board in Mexico or something.
That kind of retreat?
Like in July.
Okay, any questions, comments from the public? Do we have a motion to approve this resolution?
So moved.
With the change of the date. Yes. Okay, Allison moves.
Second.
And Dee Dee seconds. So, resolution roll call?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Da. This meeting is adjourned, but don't move.
Don't have the next one.
I have seven.
Stood up.
M&Ms.
You should actually walk out and then walk back in.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, we'll call this meeting to order. And public comments. Seeing none. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where our item is 3.1, it's the resolution. Jim?
Thank you. Ms. Vestal, I'm bringing forth on behalf of the Santa Cruz City Schools District Financing Authority, just to give a little, maybe a real quick bit of education. What happens is schools cannot directly place financing debt upon the school district itself. It has to go through a third party to be the intermediary between the finance institution and the school district. So what happens in those cases, school districts will seek out a nonprofit, JPA, or entity to actually be the intermediary between the school district and the financing authority. What this district did approximately 5-6 years ago was created their own fiduciary entity that basically had the borrower step in as the transactional authority. What this does, it saves approximately $5,000 to $6,000 in financing fees or costs to use a third-party entity as an intermediary between the school district and the financing arm. So what we're bringing forward tonight, you as the district financing authority, are similar information that was recently just passed by the Santa Cruz City School Board, but a resolution that now has the financing authority recognizing the fact that that lease has been recommended and consummated by the school board, and that this financing authority will be the intermediary between the financing arm and the Santa Cruz City Schools District to complete the financing.
Any questions or comments? Jerry?
So same exact amount. We're saving $5,000 by doing it.
Financing fees.
And there's no downside in terms of this is not an uncommon practice.
Now, what happens a lot of times, you may use CASBO. Some districts use CASBO. In a previous district, we actually had a JPA made up of Clovis Unified, Golden Valley Unified, and Fresno Unified that met once a quarter, had this group that submitted through the financing through, and that piece actually was the same JPA that set up the 403B entity to offer services to school districts. So it's, I would liken it similarly to we see municipalities. They may act as a city council, finish their meeting, then they take over and act as a housing authority, mm-hmm. as far as that. So what we've also done, Ms. Lentz and I have also looked at our December meeting when you reorganize the board, We also go look back and we organize as a financing authority. And we'll do that on an annual basis also to keep it current in case anything else comes up on behalf of the district.
Okay, any other questions? Questions from the public? All right, do we have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay, Jeremy and Deb. It's a resolution, so roll call.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Meeting adjourned.
Yay. Which means you get to have two of these fabulous meetings in December.
It's 5 to 9.
But, you know, not bad. Right,
I know. This is the first time we've ever been out before 9 o'clock.
And two meetings.
Yes.
And a recess.
8 o'clock. We were at 8 o'clock. 2 meetings a day.
I second that, Jerry. For some reason, it does. Just the heat of it.
Oh, technology.
Have a great day, Jerry.
I think we were a couple short.
Deb is too over. No,
anything. Didn't home run by the technology.
Chris? Yeah. Really?
I told you it was me. Next time you
have to do this here. Just send to us for information. We don't have to do
that.
What is it?
The letter.
This
what
letter? Brand new computer purchase date of 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's just for your information. And that's it. So at some point, though, they may or may not contact us. And it would be able through the district.
It's a big paragraph. Okay.
And she could write me again. I have an answer for her. I'll go to give some answers in the middle of the
night.
I
didn't
say much. She was just disappointed.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening.
I could send it to you. Dave, I thought you could send it. You know, I'm not prepared to send it back to her.
Send me another email. Stay, you know, just start another email and say, got another email.
Don't throw away your cups, because if you look at the bottoms of them, I have initialed them all. I'm reusing them for my
I'm Nancy, the head of the green school.
Yes.
Have you found anybody?
What?
Have you found anybody? Well, Jeremy already is on it. I know. So you're not. It's not your responsibility.
I mean, it was only about 2 seconds long, but that was.